Level 2 Certificate in ESOL, Examination C1. Section 1, Listening. I am going to give you the instructions for this part of the test. You will hear this sound at the start of each piece. Remember to transfer your answers to the optical mark form before the end of the exam. Now open your question paper and look at Part 1, Section A. Listening Part 1, Section A. You will hear Sarah Brown, a radio presenter, and George Smith, founder of the Sunshine Travel Company, talking about future trends in tourism. For questions 1 to 5, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C. You will hear Section A twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section A. Part 1, Section A. Hello and welcome to the travel program. I'm Sarah Brown and today we're talking about the future of tourism. So let's start by hearing from our first guest, George Smith, who 3 years ago set up the Sunshine Travel Company, which works differently from most other travel agents.
That's right, Sarah. At Sunshine Travel, we aim to promote holidays that generate greater economic benefits for people in developing countries to improve their well-being. For example, we work with organisations which tell us about local environmental problems that might be made worse by too many tourists. We then use this data to decide how many destinations we'll promote and how many holidays we can sell within reasonable limits.
That's interesting. But doesn't limiting your offer mean that you risk losing customers? Surely that can't be good for business.
Of course, we still want to make money and attract new customers. We send our clients all over the world. But we carefully manage the number of tourists that we send to a specific area at any one time. This helps us to avoid the problem of over-tourism, when high numbers of visitors have a negative impact on the local culture and local resources.
Most of us expect to go on holiday at least once a year these days, and the number of tourists around the world is predicted to rise. So over-tourism just seems inevitable. Is there any way to prevent it or slow it down without losing the benefits that tourism can bring to an area? So many people depend on the tourist industry for their income. I'm sure they wouldn't want to ban holidaymakers altogether.
Of course, tourism aids the economy in many countries. But we need to control the number of tourists visiting certain areas or attractions. This can be done very simply by reducing the amount of accommodation. But at Sunshine Travel, we're looking instead at the impact of charging for entry into certain areas. Entry charges already exist for tourist attractions like museums and monuments. So why not start charging for other kinds of places, like areas of natural beauty?
That's quite a radical step, though, isn't it? I mean, natural places have always been open to all and free to wander around in. I wonder how local people are going to feel about paying an entrance fee. I don't suppose tourists are going to like it much either.
Well, research shows that local people are happy with entrance fees for visitors to places of natural beauty, as long as there's free access for residents. And I don't think we should only apply charges to areas of natural interest. I think we could also ask for payment to enter popular areas of major cities.
That's certainly an interesting idea. But what about the travel industry as a whole? Environmentalists are calling for a reduction in the number of low-cost flights and restrictions on cruise ship passenger numbers. Do you agree with these suggestions?
That's a tough one. The problem is that those who can afford to pay for luxury hotels and resorts will continue to do so. Instead of punishing the average tourist, we should try to educate everyone by promoting less well-known areas and getting people to understand more about the local area they'll be visiting.
What we need is a new kind of tourist, not just a new attitude to tourism.
Yes. And that's exactly what our company hopes to achieve. We'd like to imagine a future where tourists are fully aware of the choices they make. We'd like our customers to make the right moral and ethical decisions. That means choosing holidays responsibly, so that they have the least possible social and environmental impact on the places they visit. But, of course, we still want people to experience the excitement of travelling.
That sounds wonderful, George. Thank you for talking to us. Now, in the next part of the programme, we deal with the availability of cheaper flights. Now listen again. Hello and welcome to the Travel Programme. I'm Sarah Brown and today we're talking about the future of tourism. So let's start by hearing from our first guest, George Smith, who 3 years ago set up the Sunshine Travel Company, which works differently from most other travel agents.
That's right, Sarah. At Sunshine Travel, we aim to promote holidays that generate greater economic benefits for people in developing countries to improve their well-being. For example, we work with organisations which tell us about local environmental problems that might be made worse by too many tourists. We then use this data to decide how many destinations we'll promote and how many holidays we can sell within reasonable limits.
That's interesting. But doesn't limiting your offer mean that you risk losing customers? Surely that can't be good for business.
Of course, we still want to make money and attract new customers. We send our clients all over the world. But we carefully manage the number of tourists that we send to a specific area at any one time. This helps us to avoid the problem of over-tourism, when high numbers of visitors have a negative impact on the local culture and local resources.
Most of us expect to go on holiday at least once a year these days, and the number of tourists around the world is predicted to rise, so over-tourism just seems inevitable. Is there any way to prevent it or slow it down without losing the benefits that tourism can bring to an area? So many people depend on the tourist industry for their income. I'm sure they wouldn't want to ban holidaymakers altogether.
Of course, tourism aids the economy in many countries. But we need to control the number of tourists visiting certain areas or attractions. This can be done very simply by reducing the amount of accommodation. But at Sunshine Travel, we're looking instead at the impact of charging for entry into certain areas. Entry charges already exist for tourist attractions like museums and monuments. So why not start charging for other kinds of places, like areas of natural beauty?
That's quite a radical step, though, isn't it? I mean, natural places have always been open to all and free to wander around in. I wonder how local people are going to feel about paying an entrance fee. I don't suppose tourists are going to like it much either.
Well, research shows that local people are happy with entrance fees for visitors to places of natural beauty, as long as there's free access for residents. And I don't think we should only apply charges to areas of natural interest. I think we could also ask for payment to enter popular areas of major cities.
That's certainly an interesting idea. But what about the travel industry as a whole? Environmentalists are calling for a reduction in the number of low-cost flights and restrictions on cruise ship passenger numbers. Do you agree with these suggestions?
That's a tough one. The problem is that those who can afford to pay for luxury hotels and resorts will continue to do so. Instead of punishing the average tourist, we should try to educate everyone by promoting less well-known areas and getting people to understand more about the local area they'll be visiting.
What we need is a new kind of tourist, not just a new attitude to tourism.
Yes. And that's exactly what our company hopes to achieve. We'd like to imagine a future where tourists are fully aware of the choices they make. We'd like our customers to make the right moral and ethical decisions. That means choosing holidays responsibly, so that they have the least possible social and environmental impact on the places they visit. But, of course, we still want people to experience the excitement of travelling.
That sounds wonderful, George. Thank you for talking to us. Now, in the next part of the programme, we deal with the availability of cheaper flights. That is the end of Part 1, Section A of the listening test. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Listening Part 1, Section B. You will hear Sarah Brown, a radio presenter, and John Jones, an environmentalist, talking about tourism and the environment. For questions 6 to 10, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear Section B twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section B. It's time now to welcome my next guest, John Jones, an expert on the environmental effects of tourism. So, let's start by discussing the issue of air travel. Surely this is one of the biggest culprits in terms of environmental damage.
Well, Sarah, it might surprise you to hear this, but we have to think twice before we start accusing individual airlines. When it comes to responsibility, we need to look at the wider issues. I mean, who is really responsible? Is it the airlines who are struggling to stay in business? Or is it the fault of the passengers who are willing to sacrifice the environment for a cheap holiday deal?
I take your point. But surely airlines should be doing more in terms of the environment. Other forms of transport, like buses and cars, for instance, are starting to use electricity and solar energy, which is already making a difference. Could an alternative fuel source be found for planes?
Well, for that to happen, the aviation industry needs to invest more in research. Aviation fuel is one of the worst emitters of the carbon dioxide gases that contribute to global warming. But they still haven't found a cleaner, greener alternative to the fossil fuels used in aeroplanes. Instead, the emphasis has been on making planes more efficient, so they don't use more fuel than necessary. To be honest, I see this more as a way of maximizing profits than a commitment to lowering their environmental impact.
It shocks me to hear that the aviation industry is not investing in research to find new fuels. I mean, global warming might be inevitable, but airlines surely have a moral responsibility to try to reduce it. They should start by investing more in finding cleaner fuels that emit less carbon dioxide. If they don't, then governments must start taxing air travel more heavily, and that will put up the cost of flying for all of us.
Indeed, yes. Some people think aviation fuel taxes are a good idea. But I don't believe that taxes are the answer. You see, tax rates would vary from country to country. Some countries would apply the tax and others wouldn't. To save money, airlines could just redirect their flights through countries where flying is tax-free or taxes are lower. Changing routes could mean longer flights, and then even more carbon dioxide would be emitted into the atmosphere. So, you see, flight taxes might end up doing more harm to the environment than good.
I see. But if taxes are not the answer, what should we be doing instead? Maybe we should limit the amount of carbon that the airlines can emit each year.
That's easier said than done. One difficulty is that it's extremely complex to apply national restrictions on carbon emissions across international airspace. As yet, there's no international agreement on limiting carbon emissions from flying.
That seems ironic, given that flying is the most heavily polluting form of transport that we have.
You're right. So we need to demand that the aviation industry invest more money in research and development. This investment should be a legal requirement that is carefully monitored by governments. Being forced to put money into finding solutions would be a step in the right direction to ensure that air travel, and the tourism that depends on it, is sustainable.
Well, let's hope that we can all continue to enjoy our flights abroad in the future with a clear conscience. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us, John. Now, in next week's edition, we'll be looking at the different places you can find for your winter holiday. Now listen again. It's time now to welcome my next guest, John Jones, an expert on the environmental effects of tourism. So, let's start by discussing the issue of air travel. Surely this is one of the biggest culprits in terms of environmental damage.
Well, Sarah, it might surprise you to hear this, but we have to think twice before we start accusing individual airlines. When it comes to responsibility, we need to look at the wider issues. I mean, who is really responsible? Is it the airlines who are struggling to stay in business? Or is it the fault of the passengers who are willing to sacrifice the environment for a cheap holiday deal?
I take your point. But surely airlines should be doing more in terms of the environment. Other forms of transport, like buses and cars, for instance, are starting to use electricity and solar energy, which is already making a difference. Could an alternative fuel source be found for planes?
Well, for that to happen, the aviation industry needs to invest more in research. Aviation fuel is one of the worst emitters of the carbon dioxide gases that contribute to global warming. But they still haven't found a cleaner, greener alternative to the fossil fuels used in aeroplanes. Instead, the emphasis has been on making planes more efficient, so they don't use more fuel than necessary. To be honest, I see this more as a way of maximizing profits than a commitment to lowering their environmental impact.
It shocks me to hear that the aviation industry is not investing in research to find new fuels. I mean, global warming might be inevitable, but airlines surely have a moral responsibility to try to reduce it. They should start by investing more in finding cleaner fuels that emit less carbon dioxide. If they don't, then governments must start taxing air travel more heavily, and that will put up the cost of flying for all of us.
Indeed, yes. Some people think aviation fuel taxes are a good idea. But I don't believe that taxes are the answer. You see, tax rates would vary from country to country. Some countries would apply the tax and others wouldn't. To save money, airlines could just redirect their flights through countries where flying is tax-free or taxes are lower. Changing routes could mean longer flights, and then even more carbon dioxide would be emitted into the atmosphere. So, you see, flight taxes might end up doing more harm to the environment than good.
I see. But if taxes are not the answer, what should we be doing instead? Maybe we should limit the amount of carbon that the airlines can emit each year.
That's easier said than done. One difficulty is that it's extremely complex to apply national restrictions on carbon emissions across international airspace. As yet, there's no international agreement on limiting carbon emissions from flying.
That seems ironic, given that flying is the most heavily polluting form of transport that we have.
You're right. So we need to demand that the aviation industry invest more money in research and development. This investment should be a legal requirement that is carefully monitored by governments. Being forced to put money into finding solutions would be a step in the right direction to ensure that air travel, and the tourism that depends on it, is sustainable.
Well, let's hope that we can all continue to enjoy our flights abroad in the future with a clear conscience. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us, John. Now, in next week's edition, we'll be looking at the different places you can find for your winter holiday. That is the end of Part 1, Section B of the listening test. Now turn to Part 2. Listening Part 2. Listen to 3 conversations, and for questions 11 to 20, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read the questions for Part 2. Conversation 1.
I'm glad you could make it today, Susan. Finally. What have you been up to?
Hi, Tony. Sorry I haven't been in touch for a while. My father's had an accident, and when he leaves hospital, he'll be moving in with us.
Oh, dear. Sorry to hear that. What happened?
Oh, it's silly, really. He wanted to put some pictures up, and instead of asking for help, he just climbed the ladder alone, without supervision. And then, surprise, surprise, he fell off the ladder and broke his hip.
Oh, no. It can take ages to recover from something like that when you're elderly.
Well, Dad's only 63. I thought this sort of thing only happened to very old people. Of course, in his books, I'm the one responsible. He thinks if I were a better daughter, I'd visit him more often and always be on hand to help. He might think I've been negligent, but really, he's only got himself to blame.
So, when will he be out of hospital?
Next week. My brother, James, is having him for the first few days. He's a bit unhappy about it, to tell the truth, as he won't be able to go out and leave Dad on his own. But James'll cope. And of course, Dad considers it a great honour to be a guest in his son's house for once. The real challenge will be getting him settled at our house, where he'll stay till he's better.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure he'll feel at home. You've got plenty of room. And the bed in your spare room is so comfortable. He will find it hard to get used to the racket in your house, though. Those kids of yours never shut up. But at least you haven't got any dogs to worry about like me. If my father came to stay, I don't know how we'd cope.
Yes, thank heaven for that. There are only kids at our house, no pets. Now listen again.
I'm glad you could make it today, Susan. Finally. What have you been up to?
Hi, Tony. Sorry I haven't been in touch for a while. My father's had an accident, and when he leaves hospital, he'll be moving in with us.
Oh, dear. Sorry to hear that. What happened?
Oh, it's silly, really. He wanted to put some pictures up, and instead of asking for help, he just climbed the ladder alone, without supervision. And then, surprise, surprise, he fell off the ladder and broke his hip.
Oh, no. It can take ages to recover from something like that when you're elderly.
Well, Dad's only 63. I thought this sort of thing only happened to very old people. Of course, in his books, I'm the one responsible. He thinks if I were a better daughter, I'd visit him more often and always be on hand to help. He might think I've been negligent, but really, he's only got himself to blame.
So, when will he be out of hospital?
Next week. My brother, James, is having him for the first few days. He's a bit unhappy about it, to tell the truth, as he won't be able to go out and leave Dad on his own. But James'll cope. And of course, Dad considers it a great honour to be a guest in his son's house for once. The real challenge will be getting him settled at our house, where he'll stay till he's better.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure he'll feel at home. You've got plenty of room. And the bed in your spare room is so comfortable. He will find it hard to get used to the racket in your house, though. Those kids of yours never shut up. But at least you haven't got any dogs to worry about like me. If my father came to stay, I don't know how we'd cope.
Yes, thank heaven for that. There are only kids at our house, no pets. Conversation 2.
Hi, Nancy. Have you finished reading the book for next week's book club? You know, Sons of Sorrow.
Oh, yeah. I finished it ages ago. But I have to say, it was a bit doom and gloom, wasn't it? Such a pessimistic outlook on life.
It was a little dark, I'll give you that. But I liked how the main character overcame all his problems. And even you've got to admit, it's skillfully written.
I don't know how you can say that. The whole book is just one tragedy after another. So unrealistic. The best bit about it was the number of pages. At least I managed to read it quickly.
Yes, it was a quick read, and that suited me fine. It was nothing like that huge tome we read a few months ago. Do you remember? It took us weeks. It was so long.
Oh, yes, you're right. It was never ending.
So, I know you don't like books that are too long. But what kind of books are you into?
I've read so many, all different types. I think essentially a good book should try to teach us something. It's all very well if the characters are amazing or the plot is developed brilliantly, but a book must have some kind of message.
Oh, for me it's the dialogue that makes a book what it is. Characters in novels never talk like real people, do they? They're never boring, but always so clever and witty.
Well, I personally don't care if the dialogue makes me laugh or not, but I agree that good books contain nothing like the boring conversations you or I have every day. What really matters for me is that even if dialogue is, you know, apparently simple, it still has to add to the story in some way.
You're quite the literary critic, aren't you, Nancy? So come on then. What masterpiece are you suggesting we read next?
Now listen again.
Hi, Nancy. Have you finished reading the book for next week's book club? You know, Sons of Sorrow.
Oh, yeah. I finished it ages ago. But I have to say, it was a bit doom and gloom, wasn't it? Such a pessimistic outlook on life.
It was a little dark, I'll give you that, but I liked how the main character overcame all his problems. And even you've got to admit, it's skillfully written.
I don't know how you can say that. The whole book is just one tragedy after another. So unrealistic. The best bit about it was the number of pages. At least I managed to read it quickly.
Yes, it was a quick read, and that suited me fine. It was nothing like that huge tome we read a few months ago. Do you remember? It took us weeks. It was so long.
Oh, yes, you're right. It was never ending.
So, I know you don't like books that are too long, but what kind of books are you into?
I've read so many. All different types. I think essentially a good book should try to teach us something. It's all very well if the characters are amazing or the plot is developed brilliantly, but a book must have some kind of message.
Oh, for me it's the dialogue that makes a book what it is. Characters in novels never talk like real people, do they? They're never boring, but always so clever and witty.
Well, I personally don't care if the dialogue makes me laugh or not, but I agree that good books contain nothing like the boring conversations you or I have every day. What really matters for me is that even if dialogue is, you know, apparently simple, it still has to add to the story in some way.
You're quite the literary critic, aren't you, Nancy? So come on then. What masterpiece are you suggesting we read next?
Conversation 3. Hi, Joseph. I got your message. Was it anything urgent?
Oh, Julie. Not really. But I need some ideas about what to get for Sandra's birthday.
Oh, good grief, Joseph. You can't be serious. Surely you should know her by now. I don't mind giving you some suggestions, but you have been married for 10 years.
Oh, you know how hopeless I am at choosing gifts. Come on, please. You know her better than anyone.
Okay, okay. Something special to wear, perhaps? Or don't you know what size she is?
Of course I don't. But that's not the point. I can just ask you. The thing is, clothes are just what she'd expect me to buy. And I'd like to keep her guessing.
That's rich, coming from someone who's given me a book every Christmas. But you're right. It's good to ring the changes.
So?
Well, you could stick to a more traditional gift. But how about an experience present? Like a parachute jump or a trip in a hot air balloon. You know, giving her something to do rather than something to have or wear. It's the thing to do these days, you know. Very trendy. Not your usual kind of gift. And they don't cost too much either.
Oh, but money's no object. You know me. There's nothing that makes me happier than buying presents for people I love and spreading the joy. I suppose I should try to keep my spending in check, but I can't help it. I'm so extravagant.
Oh, Joseph. Well, there are plenty of luxury experience gifts around. Hang on a minute. I'll text you details of a website and you can choose something. Maybe Sandra would like to go scuba diving this year. Now listen again. Hi, Joseph. I got your message. Was it anything urgent?
Oh, Julie. Not really. But I need some ideas about what to get for Sandra's birthday.
Oh, good grief, Joseph. You can't be serious. Surely you should know her by now. I don't mind giving you some suggestions, but you have been married for 10 years.
Oh, you know how hopeless I am at choosing gifts. Come on, please. You know her better than anyone.
Okay, okay. Something special to wear, perhaps? Or don't you know what size she is?
Of course I don't. But that's not the point. I can just ask you. The thing is, clothes are just what she'd expect me to buy. And I'd like to keep her guessing.
That's rich, coming from someone who's given me a book every Christmas. But you're right. It's good to ring the changes.
So?
Well, you could stick to a more traditional gift. But how about an experience present? Like a parachute jump or a trip in a hot air balloon. You know, giving her something to do rather than something to have or wear. It's the thing to do these days, you know. Very trendy. Not your usual kind of gift. And they don't cost too much either.
Oh, but money's no object. You know me. There's nothing that makes me happier than buying presents for people I love and spreading the joy. I suppose I should try to keep my spending in check, but I can't help it. I'm so extravagant.
Oh, Joseph. Well, there are plenty of luxury experience gifts around. Hang on a minute. I'll text you details of a website and you can choose something. Maybe Sandra would like to go scuba diving this year. That is the end of the listening test.